Today, it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio, for Ag Matters, once again, host Amy Pettit. Welcome, Amy. But you're not alone.
I'm super excited to introduce everyone to my guest this week, my friend and colleague, Arthur Keyes, the director of the State Division of Agriculture, is with us.
Oh, good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Arthur. Thank you for taking the time to come on in here. Many people probably are not aware that here in the city of Palmer, we host the Division of Agriculture. And am I correct in saying the only division that's hosted outside of either Anchorage or Juneau is the Division of Agriculture?
I think the Division of Forestry, I think their main office is actually up in Fairbanks.
Ah, okay. So you're in good company.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
But it's definitely a unique situation, you know, to on a Tuesday, typically I end up, start my day in Anchorage at the Atwood.
Right.
And with DNR, the rest of my team there. And then I end up out here in Palmer, and it's a pretty big culture shock between the two locations.
I can believe that. So for those listeners who may not be familiar with what the Division of Agriculture does, or even, for example, the simple matter, if we were to look at the chart of the government and say there's the governor and there's the legislature, where does the Division of Agriculture actually sit?
The Division of Agriculture, it's a division of the Department of Natural Resources, DNR, and there's a... I'm a division director, and then directly above me is a deputy commissioner, and then a commissioner, and then the commissioner is going to report directly to the chief of staff or the governor.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you got a pretty clear line to send information up and receive guidance, if you will,
down. I think that's a good way to put it.
And then we have the question of... people like Amy, others that are involved in agriculture, communicating with you. What would a person say to you as the director of the Division of Agriculture? What do you hear from below, if you will?
Well, I think lately there's been one common theme, fairly common, amongst the messages that are coming from below, and that is, you know, don't close our meat plant.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
The hot topic.
Let's go to the hot topic.
Oh, sure.
Let's just get it out of there.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about this, knowing that we would probably address this morning, or thinking that we probably should just jump right into it.
Okay.
And I just want to preface it by saying there's probably a lot of things that Arthur can't tell us or can't answer, but there's been some recent changes and transitions in ownership, and maybe you can just give us some insight as to the timeline or what's happening next or where we're at with that.
Well, I think, do you think this is warrants maybe a little history, background
of the state of Alaska? For all of us, all those listening, right.
A meat plant. I've had conversations with legislators, and some of them have actually expressed surprise that the state of Alaska owns and operates the only USDA-approved slaughter facility in South Central Alaska.
Okay.
So, in 1986, the Agriculture Revolving Loan Fund, also known as the ARLF, repossessed the McKinley Meat and Sausage. They had initially done the initial loan and paid for the construction of this slaughter facility.
Right.
1986, they repossessed it. And back in those days, there was the ACI, Alaska Correctional Industries. I don't know if you recall that, but
yes, I do.
But that was an effort to get the prison labor productive and working, and McKinley Meats got rolled into that at some point in time, and the state has operated that meat plant for about 30 years now. ACI shut down, the Alaska Correctional Industry shut down in like 2002 or 2003, I think.
Yeah, it's before my time.
And the state continued to operate the meat plant. Became a very unique situation at that point in time, because we still have prison labor in there getting training on how to process animals. And we are the only division in DNR that has corrections employees working for us. So the three staff members at the McKinley Meat and Sausage are actually, their job classification is correction corrections, really a corrections
officer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very strange, kind of a strange situation, but it's a holdover from ACI when that got closed out.
So that would seem, I just from the outside looking in above, to say, well, that's kind of cool, actually, to have a couple of different parts of the system, if you will, working together. If indeed the end result has been a process and, if we will, product that's valuable. And whenever we go down that road, we start talking about bottom line costs as a factor here.
Absolutely.
And that seemed to have been part of the discussion. In part, people thinking that the state was subsidizing this process. And to what degree is that true?
Well, I think if you look at it from the standpoint of an agriculture production business, then maybe it's true. However, I think that really misses the fact that this was set up originally as a prisoner training program.
Okay.
That just so happened to be processing animals for the agriculture industry.
Okay.
And so in that context, it's probably one of the cheaper educational programs that there are in the state. Honestly, if you think about it, it costs the state, and actually it doesn't cost any general funds. It does, over the years, there's no general fund expenditure for this. But the ARLF, the Agriculture Revolving Loan Fund, which was set up before statehood in the 50s with the initial pot of money, which makes agriculture loans to the various farmers, that fund is what covers any losses incurred or training that happens at that meat plant. So there's no UGF spent, no general funds are spent on this plant. So from the standpoint of a business, it's maybe losing $100,000, $150,000 a year. From the standpoint of its educating prisoners, maybe you could say reducing the recidivism that's happening with the employees there. What's the value in that? I think it's probably an incredible value that the state's receiving.
So now there's an opportunity cost lost if monies are going to support that operation, that money might be used for something else.
Well, certainly the money that's covering the losses at that facility, which are coming directly out of the ARLF, those funds are earmarked, like I said, since the 1950s for agriculture, to promote agriculture in Alaska.
Sure.
And those funds go to farmers to, you know, buy land, buy animals, build the infrastructure necessary for their farms to grow.
So the real, the I guess where I'm going with it, the obvious is to say, okay, and you've alluded to some what appear to be very real good results from having the plant and having it operated by the people who do operate it, and trying to tease out, okay, so what are all of the benefits that flow from that, the support of a portion of the agricultural industry, et cetera, et cetera. Versus, okay, are there other demands on that money that are being not responded to because the money is going over there?
The ARLF is healthy, right? I mean, there's plenty of money there. You're not turning away loans for lack of funds, right?
No, it's been described to me as one of the best managed funds in the state of Alaska.
Okay. And yeah. I think that's an important point to make, because once again, people begin to think that, well, this is, you know, you're still taking money from somewhere to spend it here and and of course the big question, and I'm assuming this is part of the whole sale thing, was, okay, where's private industry? Where the private party that would make a go of this and, you know, process?
So this plant, you know, the idea of privatizing it has been out there for 15 years.
Yeah.
Since 2002, I believe, they put out the Board of Agriculture and Conservation, which oversees the ARLF, did an initial offer trying to sell this plant, trying to move it into the private sector. And I think they offered it for $5 or something.
Yeah.
Something totally absurd, just trying to get an interested party to take it over.
Okay.
No takers. They offered it again in 2000, I think, 4 or 6. And again, same thing.
So
no takers.
Why? I mean, that would seem to be anybody who could get in with that kind of low entry fee.
Right.
Why not? Why no one taking?
You know, for I think there's a variety of reasons for that. And you know, the state has managed it more like a school.
Okay.
I mean, if you thought of a school that's going to train 13 people year round, can you imagine a school costing only $100,000 a year to operate?
Okay.
I mean, that's pretty crazy. They've done that because they provide a service, they collect fees for those services, and it works out to about $100,000 losses. Well, when you try and mesh in a private business with that, and you offer this school up for sale for $5, uh-huh. suddenly the business plan that's existing isn't maybe necessarily conducive to what the private industry wants, because the private industry isn't in the business of operating a school at $100,000 loss. So how enticing is it? Not too enticing, unless you look at it from the standpoint, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to change the entire business plan. We're no longer going to be a school. Okay. Our focus is going to change. And that's going to be a big endeavor. It's anybody that tackles this is like to be applauded by the state of Alaska, because just that whole shift, it's so different than that, how it's been run historically. It's going to take someone who's got a lot of ambition and a great vision to make this happen, because it's so different than how it's being operated now.
Okay. Well, this is Mike Malevsky, and we're in Ag Matters, and Amy Pettit has brought a guest, the director of the Division of Agriculture, and we're talking about a hot topic, which has had some progress right now. But I just want to remind listeners, if you're listening in the morning and not at the second rebroadcast of the show, you can call 745-8900 and ask a question. I'll get an answer and all the rest. Okay, so we've done a little bit of the history. Do we need any more before we plunge on to the actual sale of the
current situation?
Yeah.
So I think the current situation is very exciting. You know, we had this year we put out two RFPs mm-hmm. to make the sale happen. We did have a few applicants put in for it, and for various reasons, they were rejected by the Board of Agriculture and Conservation. And after the final meeting, they chose to go to an over-the-counter process, move away from a stipulation of you must run this plant for 5 years and you must provide these and mm-hmm. services and do these certain things. Because during the course of the meetings with the potential respondents to the RFP, it just kept coming up that these stipulations that you're putting on it don't account for the transition of the business plan, the private sector, and what that's going to entail to create a successful venture. So they went to the over-the-counter process, I think a week and a half ago, and right. there were a few offers put on the table there, and the offer that the Board of Agriculture and Conservation chose is from Mike's Meats in Eagle River, and he basically is a cash offer, and he's ready to go and moving forward.
Oh.
Can you tell us at all about when the transition takes place, Arthur?
You know, that's a great question. The board wanted this transition to happen promptly.
Yesterday.
Actually, they wanted it to happen tomorrow.
Oh.
Yeah, you're very close. However, you know, this is a real estate transaction.
Okay, well, let's just pause for a moment and see.
Ooh, got
since,
a caller.
We have a caller. Let's see what's happening here. Hello there. You're on the air. Do you have a question for Amy or Arthur?
Yeah, I do. Do I need to mute this thing?
If you're listening on the radio, you want to just use the phone and forget the radio. Yes, turn the radio down, please.
Okay.
We have a caller. Let's see what's happening here.
Okay. And could you tell us your name, please?
Yeah, this is Larry DeBilbis.
Oh, Larry.
Hey, good morning, Larry.
Hey, Larry.
You know about the Division of Agriculture. Okay, what's your question?
Well, I really don't have a question. I just want to compliment Director Keyes for finally getting this accomplished. And I did want to add one little piece of information.
Okay.
Back when this was offered for, I think, $1 a year, maybe $5 a year on a lease, the killer pill for those of us in the industry was the requirement to take everything that came to the back door. And for somebody in the private sector to have several of these dairy herds out here that were hanging on a shoestring that could show up in mass. It was a killer because you couldn't take that liability and have to market all that meat. So that answers one question that you had. But thanks
for that information, Larry.
Yeah, I think that's good information for people to hear.
You're a beef cattle producer, right, Larry? You still have some cows? Yeah. So are you excited about this transition?
I am. I have said for years that the state ownership of this plant has actually retarded other infrastructure development in South Central. And because nobody's going to do something and be competing with the state. And I'm pleased that we've got a private owner now that's integrated, vertically integrated, right into the market. And that is the model that has worked best in every aspect of agriculture up here. It's what we've got in the dairy businesses that have survived and work, and the vegetables, and now the meat operation. So I think we're looking at blue skies ahead.
Headed in the right direction, right?
Hey, Larry, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So in your time as director of agriculture, how controversial did you find this issue?
Well, it's probably the main reason I'm not the director of agriculture today.
Okay.
So my experience is maybe a little bit similar to yours.
I don't know what kind of correspondence you're getting, but I can imagine that there is some controversy to it because there are special interests, minority interests, but this is going to push them to make their business model work on a competitive and a sustainable basis without state subsidies. And that's the only thing that's going to give this segment of agriculture a long-term chance at a successful future.
I agree with you.
Agreed. Yep. Thanks so much for the call, Larry.
Okay. Thank you, Larry.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Okay, Larry DeVilbiss, former director of Division of Agriculture, calling in there.
Larry was actually my boss when he hired me when I worked at the Division of Agriculture.
Oh, so. There we go.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep. I think we can move off meat plant unless somebody else calls in. We've got all the details out there, right?
I think so.
All the important parts.
Okay. Next topic.
Yeah. Next topic.
What other issue even comes close to?
So you've been on the job 10 months,
yep,
right?
Okay.
You're coming up on your 1 year anniversary, which is exciting.
Yep.
There's been a lot has happened in 10 months. What are you excited about for the next, 6 months? What's coming up that you're most excited about that you can tell us?
Well, the team at the Division of Agriculture, the group of people that I'm working with.
Now that I'm gone. Just kidding.
And certainly, Amy, we'd love to have you come back. And I think that's not the first time I've said that. Yeah. But okay. I think the group of people that we're building at the Division of Agriculture, I think is they're getting excited. I'm seeing optimism around the group of the people that we're working with. And I think there's not a lot that I can share right now, but I think there are exciting developments in the future for agriculture in Alaska.
Yeah.
So one question I've had. Whoops. Here we go. Mike Malevsky with Ag Matters. Who am I talking with?
This is Joseph Davis with Weather Reports from Glacier Dew.
Oh, okay. Joseph, you've been listening in on this show this morning?
Not exactly. I've been pecking. So no.
Okay. Well, what we're doing right now, we're doing Ag Matters, and we have Amy Pettit, and we also have Arthur Keyes, who's director of the Division of Agriculture. And so, give a quick weather report, and then if you have this opportunity to ask a question about agriculture in the Glacier View area.
I certainly do. So, weather, quickly, it's 3 degrees down at the river, down low, and oddly enough, it's zero up on the bench, up higher on road level, which is unusual, again, to be colder than the river. The winds are out of the north at zero. I don't even know what that means. The sunrise is at 10:07 a.m.
Okay.
Sunrise, 10:07, or 5 hours, 18 minutes of sunlight in Glacier View. And the moonrise is at 5:14 p.m., and that's all the weather I know. Roads are good. Roads are great.
Okay, so Glacier View is not has not popped up in my observation as an agricultural area.
Wrong.
Okay, I threw that out there.
We even have Glacier View Gardens because we couldn't have a garden club because nobody in Glacier View would join a garden club. But we have a group of people that meet. And every once in a while, we're doing beekeeping workshop. We just had
a beekeeping workshop.
Yeah. And we had the workshop now so that people can have a community order for bees in January and then more intensive workshops on beekeeping. But also, one local resident has grown quinoa as a test, and it grew fabulously. I'm not going to mention my name by name, but with the sole purpose of giving the seeds away to others in Glacier View to grow quinoa because it is a very high protein food.
It's delicious. So, yeah, very cool.
Yeah, it's delicious. So the question is, tell us about quinoa growing in the Palmer-Wasilla area. Or, I mean, quinoa is Aztecs in high mountains, sandy.
I would suspect, Joseph, that Joseph, you were on the quinoa cutting edge, growing. But Arthur has something to say.
Yeah, I know what you should do. The Division of Ag. One of the best kept secrets that we have is the Plant Material Center out in the Butte.
And I've been there. I love those guys.
Oh, yeah. You do? Okay.
Do they know about your quinoa?
Yeah.
Oh no.
You go.
Yeah.
They are, for lack of a better term. There's some really good plant nerds there.
Yeah.
And this is the kind of thing that they would probably bend your ear and talk with you for quite a long time about.
And there are some guys there that probably have some tips and tricks and or they know somebody somewhere because some of the staff there at the Plant Materials Center, you ask them about anything and one of them knows about strawberries and one of them knows about, grains
potatoes.
And they just, potatoes, there's a potato expert. There's a disease expert. There's, a few years ago when I worked at the division, we had a grant application from a guy, I want to say that he was in Delta Junction, and he wanted to do a quinoa variety trial. But the particular grant that he was applying to, we couldn't touch grains with that money. But so there is definitely interest in quinoa around the state, and it seems like I've seen it growing on the way to Seward. There was a little patch.
Well, there's amaranth that looks very much like quinoa.
Okay.
Another exotic grain. Right.
A couple of things about that is if it mixes with the quinoa, you're going to lose protein. So you want to keep them separate. And also, when I got some regular quinoa seed out of, somewhere. But
yeah, don't give away your secret.
No, I don't remember. It's just generic quinoa seed. But then I found the White Mountain Farms in Colorado, and I bought some eating quinoa, 10-pound bag of quinoa, because it's a good price. But then they said they sold seed, so I said, I'll buy some seed. And I asked for tips, and they said, talk to the head farmer. And the guy called me. The head farmer called me, and he said, you're in luck, because the quinoa that they sell for seed will bloom even with more than 12 hours of daylight.
Mm-hmm.
He understood I was from Alaska, so there's an issue of the quinoa blooming, producing seed with more than 12 hours. Now, my quinoa crop was 4 feet high.
Wow.
It was magnificent. And I had llama beans from our local llama person. I put it in each of the little depressions where I planted the quinoa because that's a home plant for quinoa, in South. So, fabulous fertilizer, and it did the quinoa really well. So now I've got all this seed, which all I want to do is give it away to people in Glacier View. I suppose a few people could twist my arm. I don't have that much, but for other places. But I will talk to the plant guys because they're really cool.
Another thing, Joe, there's a conference coming up, the Sustainable Ag Research and Education Conference. I think it's in Fairbanks this year in February or March. But boy, I'm going to call Steve Seifelt as soon as we're done here at Ag Matters and say, Steve, you need to call Joe and see if he'll come talk about his quinoa at that conference. Because people are going to want to know about this.
And Mike has my number. So.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
We'll take care of that. Thank you, Joseph, for calling in.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, quinoa.
And that's a perfect lead-in to something that I've been wondering about. Others have. We've just had some more recent reporting about the changing temperatures and so on in the Arctic and Alaska. And I've talked to others about the growing length of the growing season. So we're looking ahead to say, does it seem that that's part of what we can anticipate? Is a change in the agricultural growing time, things grown, et cetera, because of climate change?
I think we've seen it. I think we've already seen it.
With the peony growers, you know, we had this boom in the peony industry, right, in Alaska. And everyone was so excited about, you know, peonies, and they bloom at a different time of year in Alaska than in the lower 48. And there's this demand for the buds, et cetera, et cetera. But then these last couple winters with no snow cover and with the frost getting down into the ground, unfortunately, a lot of our peony growers have lost their entire crop due to the lack of snow and then the fluctuation in the winter temperatures.
Right. I've talked to a few people that point that out and said, whoa, you got to have that narrow, you got to have enough snow.
Yeah.
To cover. Yep. Or some alternative way to provide insulation.
Mulch.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Snow is going to be that's your tool.
Yeah.
Going back to that.
Unfortunately, you can't control it.
Well, and I know working with Ben Vanderweel here in the Valley, I think it was this spring that he was in the ground 2 or 3 days earlier than he'd ever been in his, 49 years of farming in the Valley. And it might not seem like a lot, 2 or 3 days, but that's significantly different when you have 50 years of growing history and suddenly you're in the ground 3 days earlier than you've ever been.
Wow.
Yep. And a day in the spring is worth 2 or 3 in the fall.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The power of that early spring is just incredible.
The sunshine and the heat. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Yep. Well, we have about a couple minutes left before we finish up with this version of Ag Matters. Do you want to do any last comments about things we have not talked about or summary of what we have? Your choice.
You know, we need to mention that it's the 30-year anniversary of the Alaska Grown
logo
year, and it's about to wrap up. We're going to have it will not be the 30th year anniversary here in a couple
weeks.
That's
true. So. We just want to remind people in that regard that, it's the dead of winter, it's December, and people might think that there's not a lot of Alaska Grown products available, but that's not true. They go to the grocery store, they can still find Alaska Grown milk and potatoes and carrots and barley flour products from up north, and there's still farmers markets going on year round where they can source Alaska Grown. I think Bush's Bunches here in the Valley is opening a couple of days a week. They usually announced on their Facebook page, and they've still got last week I think they had kohlrabi from storage, cabbage and colored carrots and all sorts of stuff. So look for that logo, and especially in the grocery store, right? We really need that support. I just want to throw it out there that some of the grocery stores are bringing in potatoes from outside and then reducing the price on them just dramatically. And it's having an impact on our local growers. You know,
Absolutely.
People are buying those outside potatoes because they're so much cheaper. And boy, we just really need Alaskans to stay loyal to Alaska Grown and remind those grocery stores that Alaskans prefer Alaska Grown.
Okay.
Yep. It's not just food. It's a jobs issue. It's a health issue. This is our economy. This is our community.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, Amy Pettit,
thanks,
for coming in and bringing Arthur Keyes in, Director of Division of Agriculture. Mike Malevsky here. We're finishing up with a robust edition of Ag Matters with two great calls from two great people who have interests in agriculture.
Thank you, Larry DeVilbiss.
Yeah.